Hi again, podcast listeners. It's Doug Fabrizio with this week's Creative Utah Challenge. Of course, this is our partnership with the Utah Arts Festival. And each Friday between now and the festival, which, by the way, starts on the 25th of June, runs through the 28th, we're going to be posting a short podcast and the challenge for that week. And in that podcast, we'll offer a few ideas about how to go about the challenge. This week, this is challenge number 3. We're going to ask you to find some sound around you. And the idea is to put some sort of frame around a moment of audio. Could be something you hear every day. It could be something really basic or commonplace. And this is a chance to listen to it with more attention, to listen to the art in the sound around you. Jeremy Grimshaw is a musicologist, associate dean of the College of Fine Arts and Communication at Brigham Young University. He's on the music faculty there, and he is very interested in American experimental music and also, by the way, sound. So we sat down with him this week to talk about found sound, and we started by asking what part it plays, actually, in modern music.
Especially in, you know, in the turn of the 20th century, there were so many sounds in the environment, industrial sounds, mechanical sounds, that at some point artists couldn't pretend that that wasn't part of their sonic world. And so a lot of composers in the early 20th century started playing around with sounds, incorporating technological sounds into their music, like typewriters or machines. And then with the advent of recording technology, it became easier to incorporate found sounds into compositions and into performances.
So I'm guessing they saw sounds as, well, different things probably. I'm guessing they saw them as metaphors for different things like industry and technology, I suppose. But you also have said that they were trying to teach people to listen to sounds aesthetically instead of functionally. Explain what you mean.
Yeah, well, so for example, there's a futurist composer named Russolo, Luigi Russolo, who invented these machines that were supposed to mimic industrial machines. And so they made roars and whirs and wind sounds and clanking sounds. And the idea was that, yeah, these sounds represent something or they evoke something, but they're also just sounds, just like a violin is a sound or a drum is a sound. And they have character. They have properties that you hear. They have size and shape and color. And eventually, composers start blending those ideas. The idea that, okay, so musical notes have character. They convey emotions. They can have a narrative character. And sounds also carry a lot of baggage, too. They evoke, you know, the machine that they're imitating or the machine that makes the sound or the place where the sounds are located. And that has a, you know, when you hear a sound of a machine or, you know, a train or a factory or nature, part of you is carried to the space where that sound is made. And that has an emotional quality to it. And so some composers started blending the kind of emotional potential of musical instruments and musical composition with the sort of evocative emotional sense that sounds carry with them.
One of the pieces you talk about that kind of illustrates this quite well is a piece by the composer Steve Reich called Different Trains. Talk about Different Trains. It's really amazing.
Yeah, it's a really kind of a milestone piece. Different Trains was composed for the Kronos Quartet, a string quartet, but it combines string sounds and pre-recorded sounds and found sounds. Reich culled through oral histories of Holocaust survivors. And he also used an oral history of a train conductor, and he also interviewed his governess, who had ridden with him on trains between his divorced parents. The piece is a reflection on the emotion, the very potent emotion of these remembrances and these voices with this sort of churning emotion of strings. And sometimes the strings are sort of imitating the sounds of trains. Sometimes the strings are imitating the sounds of the voice, like little snippets of speech. And so it's this very potent blend of very evocative emotion from speech and very evocative emotion from sounds, train whistles, combined with the sound of the string quartet.
The theme that continues in this series, as we're going along, we found is the importance of being present or of paying attention. And I wanted you to talk a little bit about that, because that seems to be what the composer John Cage was getting at least in part anyway, with his piece called 433. Set this up for us first, though. What is this really extraordinary composition he made? I guess you could call it a composition. I guess it is.
Oh, it is a yeah. You can buy the score.
That's right.
Absolutely. And in fact, people have been sued for copyright infringement for unauthorized appropriations of the piece. So in 1952, John Cage, and he was an experimental American composer. He was very interested in found sounds and environmental sounds. He was very interested in setting up compositional processes where you set up some rules or some parameters, and then you sort of let things happen within those parameters. And maybe the most extreme example of this is 4 minutes, 33 seconds. And you can look at the score, and the score has three movements. And after each movement number, it says tacit, which means rest on this one. So the idea is the performer or performers enter the performance space, and then they just sit there. They don't make any intentional sort of noise with musical noise with the instrument.
Right.
And the idea is that in this particular kind of environments where you've set up a frame around the painting and then you don't put anything inside the frame, the listeners are drawn in because they've turned on their listening ears. They've turned on their music ears. And that allows them to hear whatever else is going on in the room in sort of HD, right?
Right.
They hear the rustling of programs, the shuffling of feet or sighs or the whir of the air conditioner. And it turns out that any space that you're in is full of sound. It's full of some kind of sonic character and content. It's just that we usually don't notice it because our ears aren't attuned to it. So in that hyper-aware environment, hopefully, we hear everyday things with a kind of aesthetic sense.
Let's talk about how sound works in physical space. Now, one of my favorite short documentaries is this piece by some British filmmakers, and it's called Notes on Blindness. And what they did is they built their film around an actual audio diary. It was the diary of a British theologian by the name of John Hull, and he made this audio diary as he was going through the process of going blind. And he becomes completely blind. And Hull talks about the sound of rain outside.
Rain brings out the contours of what's around you in that it introduces a continuous blanket of differentiated and specialized sound, uninterrupted, which fills the whole of the audible environment. If only there could be something equivalent to rain falling inside, then the whole of a room would take on shape and dimension.
And that's what happens, right? I mean, whatever is present in a room gives a place dimension and shape.
Yeah, that quote really shed some light on this idea, because every place you ever find yourself is full of sound, but part of that sound is just the shape of the space.
Mm.
I have this very vivid memory. I grew up in southern Utah, and one day in elementary school, there was a local radio DJ named Kent McGregor, and he's blind. And he came to talk to our class about what it was like to be blind. We were in the library of the school, and there was one moment where he stood in one place and he said, that because he was blind, he could hear things that most people didn't notice. And he stood in one spot and he said, for example, I can tell that the ceiling right here is lower, and then he took a step forward, than it is right here. And that just blew my mind, that he had such a strong sense of physical space that he could tell that the ceiling was a foot and a half higher in one spot. And that's something that we don't notice very much in everyday life. But every place has some sort of sonic characteristics, whether they're ambient sounds or whether it's just the sound of the space itself, the sound of your voice in the space.
You've mentioned the composer Alvin Lucier. He wrote a piece called I Am Sitting in a Room. Is that reflective of what we're talking about here?
Yeah, it may be the most thorough and, I think, beautiful exploration of that idea. So Lucier composed this piece in 1969, and the way it works is Lucier sits in a room, and he records this monologue.
I am sitting in a room different from the one you are in now.
And it goes on for, I don't know, a minute, minute and a half. So he records this little speech, and then he plays the recording back into the room, and he records the playback.
I am sitting in a room different from the one you are in now.
And then he takes that third iteration, and he plays that back into the room, and he records that playback. And what happens is that every time you get more and more of the sound of the room, of the resonance of the room. It's amplified every time you re-record it. After he does this dozens of times, all you hear is the resonance of the room. It completely erases his speech. So you just hear these rising and falling arcs of sound. It's beautiful and melodious and resonant. And by the end, you can hardly tell it's speech.
Okay, now for something kind of practical.
Yeah.
Give us, if you would, some guidance for people who are trying out this particular challenge. So what should people be looking for in creating an interesting sound, you think?
When you're listening to sounds around you, you may not notice certain things because they're not very loud. And so you may have to kind of zoom in your ears. But so many things around you have sound. I mean, the surfaces of things have sounds. Your body has sounds. I mean, if you rub your fingers next to your ear, it turns out there are lots of sounds all around you. When the microphone was first invented, it wasn't for music. It was for science. It was so that you could hear tiny little things like insects moving. So one of the pieces of advice I would give to listeners trying to find a found sound is to, you know, adjust the input level in your ears a little bit. So you open yourself up to sounds that might be so quiet and everyday that you don't even think of them as sounds. You don't notice them, the rustling of things, the tapping of things, the clicking of things. And then open yourself up to really big sounds. There's a lot of construction going on our campus here, and a lot of people find it really intrusive, and I find it really kind of beautiful, like huge pile drivers off in the distance. You know, it's fantastic sound.
That's Jeremy Grimshaw. He's a musicologist at Brigham Young University, the author of the book, Draw a Straight Line and Follow It, The Music of Lamont Young. Okay, now it's your turn. Small sounds or big sounds or common sounds, rare sounds, go out and record them. And then share them on social media and use this hashtag, CreativeUtah. That's what we're calling this series of challenges. You can also email them to us at radiowest@kuer.org, and we'll just post it for you. If you want links to the music you heard in the conversation today or samples of the sound challenge, or if you want to listen to any of the other Creative Utah challenges, just go to our website, radiowest.kuer.org.